So we're moving right along, and as promised, we have a gentleman who I really respect his entrepreneurial spirit. I respect his willingness to step out where others fear to go. Kirk Sorensen, welcome back to Speedy Radio.
Thanks a lot, Charlie. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I just want to start off. We had Dr. Hargraves on earlier, and he talked about, you know, some of the many benefits involved with thorium reactors and so forth, and talked about all the benefits and things that we may get from it, especially replacing coal as he saw it as a primary energy source. But I want to start off with asking you, what motivated you to become an entrepreneur to try to get this thing off the ground? And I listen, it's easy to say money. I know that. But I've been an investor in my life in startups and things of that nature, and they're not all pieces of cake, you know. A donut shop is a lot different than doing something like lifter technology. What was your motivation? What made you decide you wanted to get involved in this with Flybe Energy?
Well, and my investors probably wouldn't be too excited to hear me say this, but it was not money. It was more a realization that it needed to be done, and wasn't being done in our country, and I was, if nobody else was going to do it, I was going to go after it.
I appreciate that spirit. You know, that Duryea built the automobile in France, and Henry Ford said, listen, we need something like that here, and we've got to do it sounder and more reasonably and make it available to the people, and revolutionized humankind. And that's sort of the way I see you. And I'm, you know.
Well, I certainly hope it turns out like
Yeah, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah,
it would
be nice to have your name up there on that big board. But that's, you know, I'm fascinated. I think everything you're doing is right. I mean, what you're promoting is right. And everything I've read about thorium and lifter technology is the right way to go for our country and the globe, for that matter. And so do you mind getting a little philosophical with me here?
That would be fine.
That'd stir your stirrups a little bit. So we know that the advantages are if everybody in the globe, it's everywhere, you know, practically everywhere, and it's accessible, thorium as a source. And if everybody in the globe were utilizing it, how do you see that as a dreaming entrepreneur? What do you see someday in the ultimate dream of this whole thing? How do you see it working out and playing out eventually?
Well, to operate a liquid fluoride thorium reactor, I mean, it's not a completely simple piece of machinery. It's not like a lawnmower engine or anything like that. It's going to be something where you're going to be in countries and societies that have a degree of technological sophistication. So I don't necessarily think that it will produce every watt of power on the whole world someday. I think there will be other things. But I do think that for the majority of the power that is currently produced in technological nations, you know, in nations that have the kind of living standards we have, that this has the potential to be that energy source, because it's compatible with those kind of societies. It's very dense. The energy source itself is extremely dense. And although it is, you know, there is a degree of technological challenge, it's a simpler machine than what we're doing today with existing nuclear reactors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we are, hopefully by the end of this century, going to make that transition to a mostly thorium-powered world.
Wow. Well, see, looking at the geopolitical aspects of it, though, yeah, Somalia may not be able to afford lifter or thorium technology today, but if India and Indonesia and China and the United States and Canada and Europe are all using them, then that opens up the other resources for Somalia to catch up with everybody else.
You know, petroleum is a really remarkable substance. It has incredible energy density, and the machine that it takes to release that energy is really, really simple. Like I said, you know, a two-stroke engine can release the energy of refined petroleum.
Right.
Releasing the energy of thorium is a bit more complicated. It takes a more sophisticated machine. But you're absolutely right. If we were using thorium for the bulk of our energy in the developed world, it would free up a lot of the petroleum for use in the developing world. And eventually, you know, their societies will reach the point where it will be an option for them as well.
So Dr. Hargraves mentioned to me, and I think you and I talked about it a month ago, is that the smaller reactors you know, don't take the great big huge structures that you talked about, how those big domes and all that stuff aren't so necessary.
Yeah.
Let's get down to the cutting here, okay? The brass tacks. How big of a geographic area could one reactor service? You know, in other words, well, the city of Toledo, for example, we got about 300,000 in our greater metro area here. Would a typical, as you see it, Lifter reactor take care of everything in this area for us?
One or several of them. I mean, mm-hmm. We can build these reactors in different sizes. We can build them small. We can build them large. I think in Toledo, you're getting a lot of your electricity from a nuclear reactor.
Davis-Bessey
plant. And just to kind of take it from that perspective, if you've seen the Davis-Bessey plant, does it have cooling towers?
It sure does.
Okay, so there's two main structures that people see when they see a nuclear reactor. They see the cooling towers. Most people think that's the nuclear reactor. You know, mm-hmm. It's not. That's the structure that the steam turbine is using to get rid of heat. That's the first thing that we can potentially eliminate in this design. We're using a gas turbine instead of a steam turbine, and we have a technique where we can reject the heat to the air different than cooling towers. We still have to reject heat to the environment, but it could be far smaller and a lot less visually obstructed. The other structure people see is they see a cylindrical building with a dome on the top. That's the actual reactor building. That's the building inside is the machine that's making the nuclear energy. But if you could look inside that building, you'd see the reactor's really pretty small compared to the size of that building. And the reason the building's so big is it has to be able to contain the steam that would evolve out of the reactor if there was a break, because the reactor's running at really high pressure. In our design, we don't run at high pressure, and we don't have any water coolant, so there's no need to have a building that's so many hundreds of times greater in volume than the reactor. The containment building can fit much more closely around the reactor vessel. So your two biggest visual obstructions of a conventional reactor, one is essentially reduced tremendously, the other one is reduced even more than that. So a lifter that made the same amount of power as like a Davis-Bessey would be a lot smaller and far less visually obstructive.
So then it makes sense that we could put more of them in various locations, because we wouldn't have that huge footprint that one big monstrosity has to take up in order to generate the uranium-based electricity.
Well, that is true. In defense of what we're doing now, though, it's really pretty amazing what a small footprint a conventional reactor has, though, for how much power it puts out. I mean, mm-hmm. I was driving up through Indiana a few weeks ago, and there's a huge field of windmills I was driving
through. Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I was looking at these things. I live in Huntsville, Alabama, and we have a Saturn V rocket model here. It's about 360 feet tall. And I'm looking at these towers, and each one of them is about as big as our Saturn V. And then there's a three-bladed thing with wingspans like a big passenger jet spinning around on there. And I knew each of those were only making about 2 megawatts of power on a good day at full wind speed, whereas Davis-Bessey is making about 1,000 megawatts of power day and night. So really, nuclear energy is an incredibly energy-dense source. And what we're positing here with Lifter is that we can make it even better.
Wow. Well, I should mention that I live outside of Bowling Green, Ohio, and we have some right out there on our prairie land out there. And I'll tell you, my greatest fear every time I drive by is one of those monstrosity blades is going to fall off, and, you know, there goes Charlie.
Well,
anyway,
sometimes they throw a blade. It's not unheard of. You can look it up on YouTube.
Yeah, they mess up the birds pretty good around here, too. So anyway, that's So we're there as far as you have an understanding of what it's going to take to do this. At what stage are you in developing this this technology to the point where you can put it on the market? How far away are you? And I don't know even how to characterize that.
Well, unfortunately, as we talked about last time, we're still really pretty much at the beginning.
At the primitive stage.
Our company was incorporated about a year ago. We're still small and looking for investment, but we want to take this. We want to take this all the way. And I kind of comfort myself sometimes saying, well, once upon a time, you know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were sitting in a garage. You know, mm-hmm. Well, we're not too many stages removed from that. But every dream begins small, and some of them eventually get lucky enough to be big.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not just, this is not brown nosing, okay? I'm at the age in life where when people still have the energy, and I mean that in the internal sense, to get out and get things done and to take a chance, I really appreciate it. Flybe Energy, are you a public or private company?
We're privately.
So you may be looking for investors, but more along the investment capital groups, that type of thing, significant.
Yeah, we're talking to deep-pocketed and patient investors.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's a chance. I mean, it's you know, we're not sure that you can get her done in time to get her done, you know, and that's one of those things we really encourage. Wait, Dr. Hargraves talked about he's going to China to this conference. Is that in your plan?
No, I'm not planning to go to the conference in China. Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's anything your company could benefit from what's happening over there that you could pick up from there that you might find useful or so forth? In other words, I guess what I'm saying is how broadly do you reach out, I mean, to discover what can help you and help you develop this thing and bring it up to, you know, up to the market?
We really do reach out worldwide. I have regular contacts with people in the UK, in France, in Italy, in the Czech mm-hmm. Republic. Previous to the earthquake, we had a little group in Japan that was working on this, and we were talking with them. One of the reasons I'm not going to conference in China is we have a videographer who's going to go, who's made a lot of the videos you might have seen online about Lifter.
Right.
And he does such a great job. When I found out he was going, I said, well, there you go. I can save a couple thousand dollars.
I'll just watch the video
when you get back.
And, yeah.
Yeah, but I am very interested in what they're doing, and I try to keep close tabs on it. But we have to also husband our resources very carefully, too.
Yeah, I can understand. Okay, now let's. I assume you have a business plan. And I assume it's subject to change. Okay.
You are correct.
Yeah, but your goal, as I understand it, is to build the Lifter and basically sell it to power companies or whatever. Do I understand?
Slight variation of that. We're actually very interested in not just building the Lifter, but also operating.
Oh, okay. So you want to compete with Duke and AEP and all these other people who are ripping off the consumer today.
We would like to sell electrical power to them, and a lot of big power companies do this, where they buy power from a lot of the legislation lately is to be able to buy power from wind and solar.
Right.
But the same principle applies, that you can buy electrical power from smaller generators and then resell it on your grid. And so that would be the business model that we're pursuing right now. Now, like you said, everything's subject to change. But our reasoning is we're going to develop a cadre of people who understand this technology. And one of the challenges previously in nuclear power has been you've had the vendors like Westinghouse and GE, and they sell reactors to utilities, some of whom haven't had a very good understanding of how to operate those machines.
Mm.
And they've operated at poor capacity factors. They've had challenges. Then in the 90s, what you saw was companies that knew how to run reactors, like Exelon, went out to a lot of smaller utilities and just bought their reactors, in some cases very low cost, and started getting machines that were only running at about 50% capacity factor, running about 90% capacity factor. It was really just because they knew how to run those machines, and they knew how to schedule the maintenance and the refueling and all those other sort of things. So I took a lesson from that, saying, you know, really it seems like you want to keep the operation of the reactor with people who understand why it works and how it works.
Well, you want the IBM guy fixing a copier. So, okay, Kirk, we thank you so much. I encourage people to go to Flybe Energy, FLIBE, and find out more. And I thank you for sharing more of your insight, your wisdom, and your energy with us. Thank you very much. Kirk Sorensen with Flybe Energy. And